Hey there, it's Nikki Klosser, and I want to let you know about an awesome free giveaway for people on our email list. If you haven't already, click the link in our podcast description or go to theportraitsystem.com/signup to get on the list. If you sign up, you'll get a free Posing 101 PDF to jumpstart things. It's an epic PDF, so you'll definitely want to get this. Also, just by being in our email community, you'll get deals, sales, and information about any of our upcoming events and activities. So head over to theportraitsystem.com/signup and sign up today. You're listening to the Portrait System Podcast.
It's all important, not just becoming the best photographer at what you do. You have to survive. You have to make a living. And the way that you have to make a living and survive is by being good at it all.
Welcome to the Portrait System Podcast. I'm your host, Nikki Klosser, and this show is here to help you succeed in the world of photography and business, to help you learn to become financially free doing what you love and so much more. With over 1 million downloads, countless photographers have taken what they've learned from both our episodes and from theportraitsystem.com, and they have grown their businesses, quit their day jobs, and are designing a life of their dreams. We keep it real and share stories about the ups and downs that come with running a photography business. You'll hear real life stories of how other photographers run their business, and you'll learn actionable steps that you can take to reach your own goals. Thank you so much for being here, and let's get started. Hey guys, now is your chance to check out all of the incredible photography education we have available for you at theportraitsystem.com. For only $7, you will get access to over 1,000 videos, including pricing, posing, marketing, lighting, sales, inspiring photo shoots, self-value, and more. Yes, you'll get your first month for only $7 when you become a pro member, and you'll get access to the full download library with posing guides and workbooks and so much more. Also, this includes a pricing calculator, a studio startup timeline, our weekly live broadcasts, including Sue Bryce's live talks, access to our private, members-only Facebook groups, special discounts on photography products, and so much more. Head over to theportraitsystem.com and enter the code PODCAST7 to get your first month for only $7. That's theportraitsystem.com and enter the code PODCAST7. This week, my guest on the Portrait System Podcast is Christina Shirk. Christina is not only an amazing photographer, but she is a master at Photoshop and editing in general. She has the ability to break things down really well, and we had a fantastic conversation about finding your developing style, simplifying Photoshop, because we all know it can be overwhelming at first, and also the importance of retouching when you're creating images. All right, let's get started with the wonderful Christina Shirk. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the Portrait System. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am wonderful. I'm excited to talk to you today. It's been a while since we've had an episode that focuses on retouching and the importance of Photoshop and Lightroom and just developing your own personal style when it comes to your photos. And it's interesting because a lot of people will say that. I wonder if you hear this often too. It's like, how do I decide what I want my photos to look like? Like, how do I figure out my style? You know, I feel like that's something that can be tricky.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think that it is a integral part of becoming a photographer is learning your development style and how you want your images to look. You know, do you like soft lighting? Do you like really airy shots? Do you find yourself bumping up the shadows so that, you know, everything has a lot of fill light and, you know, you're right at the cusp of having everything be overexposed? Or do you like dark and moody images with tons of like shadows, but still, you know, soft lighting? Or do you like crunchy blacks in your images? All of that. And we haven't even touched on color. You know, do you
colors?
Do you like cool colors in your images and color grading as well? All of that stuff goes into what the viewer sees in your images. And
Definitely. If
you forget to learn that, I feel personally that it's just as big of a part of learning to be a photographer as learning lighting.
I think so too. I have to say that I have seen some images that you look at them and you think they just slapped on some preset
and it makes it look unprofessional, and it also doesn't do anything like to preserve the skin tones, like people's actual skin color. I mean, there's just so many times that I'll see like a really good image, but the way it is handled in post-process, it just knocks it down. And you see that a lot. And I think, especially for photographers first starting, and Christina, I'm not going to lie, this was me. I was like, I would see like all these like Lightroom presets, and I would just like buy them and try and slap them on my images. It just did not work. It didn't work. It was like, you have to learn, yes, there is a time and a place for presets and actions and all of that, and I would die without them. But it's, you have to learn how to tweak and, you know, the color, like you said, the shadows, everything. You have to learn how to do that yourself, because one preset is not going to fit for every situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that when you have a preset, it's definitely, like you said, a good starting off point. And there are applications for some presets. But I think that the important thing not to forget when you are using presets is to go into each one of those sliders and play with what they've done. So basically, go to your shadow slider, pull the shadows all the way up, pull them all the way down, and see what happens to your image in the middle. I call that like polarizing, you know, pull it to one extreme and then pull it to the other extreme, and then see what that does. And then find the proper value for that image that you're working on.
Got it. Yep. Yep. You know, I think when I finally realized I had my style, I remember someone saying to me, I was scrolling like Instagram or something, and before I even looked at whose it was, I knew it was yours. And I was like, okay, I must have really developed my style. And I don't think it happened overnight. Like, I don't know if you remember when you were first starting out, but I would look at certain photographers out there and I would really love the way their images looked. But then I'd be like, oh, but I also really like how this one really looks, and this one, and this one. And I was struggling deciding on like my favorite and where I wanted to go for me and my business. And it took some time of playing around, you know, with just with different looks, and then comparing, like, what do I always go back to? Like, when I have my finished images, what am I always going back to? And I think that took a little bit of time to really fully develop. But once you get it, it's like, game on. You know, everything starts to look really cohesive, even if they're completely different genres or photos or whatever, you know, different locations. It starts to look cohesive when you have that development style dialed in.
Absolutely. And that's funny that you said that. I have 2 points. One is, because I own 2 businesses, I have my photography business, which is Christina Shirk Photography. And then I also have Shark Pixel, which is a Photoshop education brand for other photographers. Because I wasn't a photography major, I was actually a digital art major. So I learned Photoshop for 4 years in college instead of learning photography first.
Oh, cool.
And one of the things that I really struggled with in Christina Shirk Photography was the same thing you're talking about, finding that voice. But because I was such an editing chameleon in my other business of Shark Pixel. And I totally feel that. I feel that to my bones when you said it was really hard for me to finally decide on what my style of editing was going to look like. And that's because when I was editing for other photographers, I would be mimicking their style.
Right.
And so I didn't feel like I could really trust myself with what I personally liked during that experience. So I totally feel that. It is something that you really, really have to decipher on your own.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying like you need to go out and decide today exactly what you want your photos to look like, because it will morph over time. You know, I mean, I've seen some really great photographers start out with this sort of like light and airy feel, maybe when they were photographing weddings or families or whatever. And then once they decided they were going to do portraits, it turned into more of that like higher contrast, you know, because different lighting will lend better to different development editing styles, you know. So it's just something to be like really aware of, and to start, if you haven't honed in on this yet, really start on it because, like Christina, you said, it's so, so, so important to nail it down. It really is. It, for a lot of reasons. Like, talk a little bit about that, why you think it's so important.
I can't remember where I heard this anecdote, but there was some advertising director that was talking. And gosh, I really wish that I could remember. It might have been at a talk at WPPI, actually.
Oh, nice.
But what happened was this photographer was mimicking all these different styles, and their styles were all over on their website. And I think the like assistant to the ad director was like, oh, this is cool. Look at this person's portfolio. They can do everything. And that ad director was like, that's exactly why I would never hire them. Because I don't know what I'm going to end up getting.
Yeah.
And that was huge for me to hear, because all of a sudden, this whole retouching chameleon styles per se that I was battling with, and I was like, oh, let me try this, let me try that, let me try this. It was all working against what I needed to boil down and decide on, which is the artistic vision, which right. is what happens in the post-production process. It's somewhat in the lighting and in how you light it, how you shoot it, what lens choice you want. But there's just as big of a part of that that happens in the editing process.
Yeah, yeah. So what I don't want is for people out there to feel incredibly intimidated right now. Like, oh my God, I need to learn all of Photoshop. I need to learn all of Lightroom, or I'm never going to be able to have a successful photography business. Because I will be incredibly honest and say that I probably utilize 10% of Photoshop's capabilities. I mean, truly. And I know there is more that, obviously, there's so much more that I could learn, but I don't want people to think that they have to, you know, take 4 years of Photoshop school in order to learn all of these things. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that if you do learn them, it will make you a much better photographer. And I probably utilize more than 10%. But truly, like, some of these skills that you can learn will elevate your work just massively.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And to build on that, there is, with the advent of generative fill, these jobs that used to be really painstaking and be time-consuming, and you had to really know how to remove them or remove elements, for example, is all becoming so much easier thanks to Adobe Firefly and generative fill. And so what I would say is you've got to learn the pillars of Photoshop. And I, in my education, in my training, the pillars of Photoshop that I kind of explain is selections, layers, and adjustments and masking.
Mm-hmm.
And once you learn those, that is where you're going to be able to start to fly. The other suggestion that I give people a lot of times is to find a menu item, because the biggest thing that I think a lot of beginner Photoshop users struggle with is not having the vocabulary to Google what they're struggling with.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I remember going through that, and I still sometimes go through that.
Yeah. So I will usually tell them to pick a menu item and Google what it does. Take 5 minutes a day, take 10 minutes a day, and Google what that thing does. And what you'll be doing is you'll be increasing your knowledge base and your vocabulary of what the heck these tools do in Photoshop. But you're also kind of subliminally like learning a new tool that you could come back to and be like, oh, I need that. I actually need that today.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. And this might make me sound really Photoshop naive, but I don't use like some of the tools that you mentioned. I don't use a whole lot in my like basic regular portrait work. Are you talking more about compositing and things like that? Are you talking just like very, very basic, like you know, like how would you utilize most of these tools? What type of photos, I guess?
I personally think that any type of photography can be improved on by learning those specific skills.
Mm-hmm.
If you understand those things, you're going to have a really great base of the knowledge that you need in order to make things happen. Like a lot of times, it's really hard to make a selection of a certain area of an image. Like if you wanted to select all of the bright areas of your image and you thought that they were too bright, well, you can do that with select color range highlights,
right,
which is an immediate command that you can then use to create a mask and then use an adjustment to darken those highlights. So those are three of the four pillars that I just mentioned a minute ago, right? So you're using a unknown selection method to make your selection with no masking. Then you take that those pixels that are selected by the marching ants, turn it into a mask, and then put that mask on an adjustment layer, which darkens them.
Yeah.
And then it just really, with those four things, you're just going to have a very easy way of navigating Photoshop once you learn those.
Yes, I agree. Now, you are strictly photo. Do you ever use Lightroom at all?
Yeah, all the time.
Oh, you do? Okay. Because a lot of the things you're talking about, I do in Lightroom. So I think that's maybe where I'm getting a little like, oh gosh, I'm not doing all this stuff in Photoshop. I'm doing a lot of it in Lightroom. So how much are you doing in which program? Like if you just had to kind of guess.
So with the new AI masking that's come out in Lightroom Classic, a lot of the things that you used to have to go over to Photoshop for are now accessible in Lightroom, which is great because you can create presets for those.
Mm-hmm.
And you can literally have a beautifying preset because you have a auto selection method for facial skin and body skin and eye whites and
amazing.
Irises and eyebrows. I mean, come on, it's insane.
It has like saved so much time for me. My God.
Exactly. Exactly. There's really fewer and fewer reasons for our regular photographers who get everything right in camera to be going into Photoshop in the first place. I mean, you would go into Photoshop when you have like a piece that you're toning or that you want to make perfect by adding fabric or something like that or compositing different elements together from different frames per se, like into an image. That's kind of, and then the only real other thing is liquify. So if you need to do any liquifying, that would be done in Photoshop as well.
I use that liquify for in Photoshop quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something that you said that I kind of want to dive into a little bit is you said something about people getting things right in camera. And ever so often I'll hear someone say that, well, you just have to get everything right in camera all the time. And I'm thinking, I do sometimes, but a lot of the times I don't. And I don't know if that's because I am so hyper-focused on posing my client and getting the correct expression from them and making them feel really comfortable and I'm connected to them and there's different things happening in the studio, that's I'm not always getting it right. Like sometimes my backdrop is, I'm seeing like the seam of the backdrop or I'm getting too much, you know, floor space in or head space in, or sometimes I'm underexposing because I know that there are certain shadows highlights or shadows, you know, that I want to either bring down or bring back up. And I know that's easier when I'm underexposing. So in my head, I'm like, I don't always want to focus. I mean, yes, it's great to get all right in camera the first time, but I just don't feel like that's super realistic all the time. What do you think?
Yeah. And you're doing all of those advanced tips that advanced photographers use, like understanding, especially if you're like shooting outside or anything like that, you need to shoot a little bit underexposed so that you don't shoot and blow out your highlights so that somebody who's gone through that before and had to somehow try and fix that in Photoshop, you know that you can bring up your midtones, but if you blow out your highlights or that sky, it's a lot harder. It requires a lot more Photoshop work to bring that sky back. Now we have sky replacement, which makes it like super wildly easy nowadays, but it used to be a little bit harder than it is. But what I would say to that is, so Ansel Adams, in all of his classes when he taught his students, he would say that 50% of learning photography is what you learn behind the camera, and the other 50% is what you learn in the darkroom. So Ansel Adams, pre-digital development tools, pre-Lightroom, pre-Photoshop, is telling you that 50% of your images and your development of those images, and not, I'm not talking literal development, I'm talking developing your voice in that photo. What's that voice going to say to the person viewing it is done in the darkroom. So today's equivalent to the darkroom is Lightroom.
That's fascinating to think about.
I mean, so I get, like, my ads will run on Instagram and I will get these comments from photographers who say, I want to get, if you get everything right in camera, you won't need to edit. And that couldn't, I don't think that could be further from the truth, because when you shoot raw, first of all, what it's trying to do for you is capture as much data as it can in that image in order for you to be able to have the leniency or the lateral movement when you are editing those images after the fact. It is a huge part of being a photographer. And I can't help but think that when I hear those comments, that it's coming from somebody who feels intimidated by the programs which we use to develop our photos and doesn't have the time or capacity to devote the time that's needed to learn those things. And I think that that's where it comes from. So I kind of feel for them. In a way, I'm totally a proponent to getting everything as right as you can in camera. Like, I'm not telling you to, you know, polish the POP, if you will, and try and, like, be, you know, I'm not polishing a turd here.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, that's not what I'm trying to teach.
Yeah.
You need to, like, actually.
Agreed. Yep.
Learn Photoshop to develop your images.
Yeah. The other thing too is, I can't tell you how many times I've heard people or seen people like post on Facebook whenever panicking because something did go wrong and they didn't get it right, whether it was their focus or someone's eyes were closed in one of the photos, you know, of the family, but they don't know how to do an eye swap, or, you know, there's flyaway hairs everywhere that they can't get rid of. And in learning these skills that you were talking about, it just takes your anxiety level down by like 10 notches.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I can totally fix that. Not a problem. And then you fix it. And then you sell more photos.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge part of being a photographer, I think.
Yeah. I remember those days when we were all like frantic when we're just starting out as in our photography journey, and the client is looking at you and you're kind of just like, you're just so nervous, but it's all on the inside because you can't let it out and like say something's going wrong in front of a client. Like, we've all been there.
Yes.
One of my first classes that I put out years ago was like 10 mistakes beginner photographers make and how to fix them in Photoshop, because that was my journey. Like as I mentioned, I started in digital art. I started in Photoshop. That's where my training was. I didn't know the difference between like your shutter speeds and, you know, using a longer lens and that you're going to end up with motion blur. I didn't know the rule about like whatever millimeter that your lens is, you need to have a shutter speed that's 2 times the millimeter of that lens focal length in order to like avoid motion blur in your images. Like, I didn't know any of that stuff. So I know how to fix it in Photoshop, but I didn't know how to fix it in camera, or I made that mistake personally in camera first. Then I learned how to fix it in Photoshop. Then I was like, I'm not doing that again in Photoshop. I need to learn how to fix it in camera.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all that learning.
I can think, but I'm totally having flashbacks of this was when I very first started. Like, I don't even think I'd ever even opened Photoshop before. And I did senior photos on this kid, and he had really dark circles under his eyes, and I was like trying to fix it. And it must have been really, really bad, Christina, because the mom was like, why does it look like gummy underneath his eyes? And I was like, okay. And that's when I was like, all right, I got to learn some of this stuff. I need to learn it. And I fixed it. I fixed his eyes. I did it right. And ever since then, I've been like, okay, I'm never going to, I don't ever want to experience that feeling again of a mom looking at their kids' photos and thinking like something's wrong with these, you know, like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause then they can see your work.
Yeah.
Your retouching work. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a retouching mantra that I try and like ingrain into my students when I'm teaching them. And that is that 90% of what you do editing a photo can be done by either brightening or darkening a pixel or changing that pixel's color. And a perfect example of that is under eyes. Like there's nothing wrong with the skin texture. There's nothing wrong with the skin quality itself. It's the color and the brightness. So it all comes back from this physiological place, right? The skin under the eyes is much thinner than the rest of the skin on the face.
Right, right.
And that means that you're going to be able to see that blue blood pooling in that area a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And then also if they have like a serious brow that extends over the eye, it's shadowing that area as well. Yeah. If your light source is too high. And so what that means is you're going to end up with these terrible under eyes. And what you have to do is you have to brighten it and you have to shift the color away from magenta and blue. So you have to make it warmer and you have to brighten it. And you could do that with two adjustment layers and you don't have to touch the clone stamp or the healing brush tool. And I try and explain this to my students because it allows them to retouch and edit their work at a more granular level, but with doing less damage to the actual pixels themselves. And so it's just a cool way to rethink like what you're doing to the photo.
I love that. I love that. Under eyes it's a big one. It's a very big one. I use a reflector 90% of the times that I shoot. And that's one of the reasons is the under eye, because it does give a little bit more light back to that. But like you were saying, I can't tell you how many photos that I've seen. And I'm not saying I wasn't guilty of this at one point or another when I first started, where people would over-retouch, like you said, with the clone stamp tool, would over-retouch it and basically like remove the bottom lid. And then it just doesn't, I mean, it just looks completely fake.
Yeah.
But like, I love what you're saying too about, you described it perfectly. And, you know, it's about the color and the brightness. I mean, it truly does, it just makes such a difference. And then you're not changing their face so much. You're just bringing back the natural color that should be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's what retouching should be doing. I heard Terry White give a good point of view on retouching. When we look at an image and it's blown up, like it is so much larger than a face that we look at with our naked human eye. When we're looking at like a headshot or anything like that. So we're actually seeing a lot more detail than you would if you were standing in front of that actual person talking to them. And you got to think about like our sensors nowadays, how big they are, how much detail they capture, how many megapixels they are. Like nobody wants to be photographed at that level. So
like you so really much need texture to, in the skin.
Yeah.
And not to generalize, but like a lot of my clients are, you know, in their 40s, 50s. You know, I'm a 46-year-old woman. I don't want all that texture shown. Like I'd rather not have. And like you said, it's not like when someone's looking at my face, they're zooming up in close to see it all.
Yeah, they're not like in your personal space, like a close talker, right? Like looking at every pore on your face. But
I love that you're bringing this up. Such a good point. Sorry.
It's actually not necessarily the texture that is the problem. I actually am a proponent of saving all of that texture, because when you lose the texture, it starts to look like porcelain. Mm-hmm. But instead, what's going on is every single wrinkle on a face, like if you take a piece of fabric and you scrunch it up on your desk and you have one light source lighting it, every single one of those ripples in the fabric is going to have a highlight where it's hit by the light source and a shadow where it's not hit by the light source. And so what you need to do as a retoucher or when you're retouching your images is think, and every one of those contrasty areas detracts from the face in the photo. So what I prefer to teach my students is to get rid of those highlights and shadows on those, like on that texture, on that area. And so instead of using like techniques that completely soften the skin or using the clone stamp or the healing brush tool to go over those wrinkles, what I would prefer you to do is brighten the areas of shadow and darken the areas of highlight. And that's dodge and burn. That's the technique of dodge and burn. And that, to me, just like the under eyes, is a better way of approaching an issue because it allows you to save all of that texture. It doesn't touch the texture. I mean, if you want to slap on like a 20% clone stamp over that area, be my, like totally be my guest, right? Like I'm not telling you to completely get rid of it. But what I'm saying is, don't get rid of it with a heavy-handed tool that is going to actually like degrade the pixels that you initially shot, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes total sense. And I absolutely agree.
Hey, just a quick break to tell you that since you're here listening, you have access to a really great offer. For our listeners only, we have a special promo code you can use to get 50% off the cost of membership. Just go to theportraitsystem.com or click the link in the description and use the promo code podcast50 to get 50% off of a membership. We rarely discount membership, so this is a big deal. As I hope you already know, the membership is how I and so many guests on this podcast reached our success, and it gives you access to countless amazing videos, an awesome community, and all the tools you need to build a massively successful business. So use the code PODCAST50 now to join the community and to start building the business of your dreams. I'll see you there.
I try to, when my clients ask about retouching, or if I do editing, I say yes, and I don't want ever want someone to look at the photo and think, well, that was Photoshopped. It, like there is a way to do it without it looking heavily Photoshopped. That's always my goal anyway, is to do it that way.
And that and those are the techniques that I try and teach. Exactly
yeah.
that.
Yeah. It's definitely a fine balance there. But again, for people listening, I don't want you to feel like this all has to be super intimidating. Like there are so many resources out there. Like Christina, you have so many just really easy to follow tutorials in your, you know, on sharkpixel.com, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's so many resources out there. YouTube, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. We have a bunch of stuff on the portrait system, you know, in the membership. Like there are resources. It's just taking the time to actually do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about having a retoucher. So I have a retoucher. Do you use a retoucher? I know you
in
obviously.
My retouching in my photography business.
In your photography,
yes,
business.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm curious about how this works for you. So my retoucher, she doesn't do any sort of the style that I do, as far as my color tones and my contrast levels and the way that I, you know, just in general. What she does do is she takes out blemishes from skin. She deals with flyaway hair. If I mess up on the backdrop and I'm including, you know, it's a dirty frame or whatever, she'll fix it for me. Like the very basic things, but not, she doesn't turn it into my images. Like when people scroll and they know it's mine, it's because of the work that I've done to the image, not because of the work that she's done to the image. And I feel like that's an important kind of to distinguish when you hire a retoucher, like for them to not change your style. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that learning Photoshop and retouching, like I said earlier, is imperative for every single photographer to know how to do, because what you do not want to do is rely 100% on that retoucher to give your style, because then it's not your image. Sorry. Mm-hmm. It's somebody else's. And there's actually a photographer that works in Baltimore. So I'm in DC, but there's a photographer that was in Baltimore and he used to use this famous retoucher for some of his images. And they would have this like almost silvery type appearance and look. And she used a lot of like high pass filters to bring out like some of the details everywhere. And she had a super cool style. Anyway, they parted ways and he lost his entire style of his portfolio and could not replicate it.
He just didn't know how?
No, he didn't know how.
Yeah, yeah.
That is what I'm saying is the most important thing about learning your creative vision and your creative voice in terms of toning your images and understanding what your style is going to look like. That has to come from you. And then you can absolutely send layered files to a retoucher and say, this is the style that I want. Look at my portfolio. I want to keep within this style. I need you to darken the highlights. I need you to really add and boost saturation, also protecting the skin tones from getting oversaturated. These are all words and like phrases that you need to describe to your retoucher when mm-hmm. you're giving them work. And like I run a retouching business and I used to retouch for photographers. I can't tell you how cringe it was for me to hear somebody say, oh, you know, just like make it look cool, make it pop.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
What does that mean?
You know, exactly. Like, okay, so you just want me to like freestyle with this and give you all the credit for it? Like with my stylistic development of it? Like you're giving away. So are you going to add me as 50% of the photo credit?
Okay, I see. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yep, yep.
You know, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. you know, there was this post on LinkedIn the other day that was like, gosh, I can't remember what the question was, but like, how do you work with a retoucher? What is a retoucher responsible for in your photography business? And I was like, oh, I got one. I'll tell you what they are not responsible for, you know? And mm-hmm. I just kind of like laid into that. And I was like, this is what they are not responsible for. And you need to understand the terminology. You need to they will drive you from point A to point B, mm-hmm. but you're still giving them the directions of where you're going.
Yeah. Now, if like, I think some of our listeners are still kind of doing, not that this is right or wrong, but like sending a lot of images to clients, like, you know, 100 images per shoot or whatever. And it, you know, it takes a lot of time to do things individually on photos. And, you know, oh, and I should say, I do have my own preset that I created for myself that I put on every single, I would say 95% of my images. It's a starting point. It's what I know mm-hmm. I'm going to do to every single image anyway. And this is in Lightroom. It's a one click. I put it on everything, almost everything. And I love mm-hmm. it. But I still have to manually, you know, tweak the photos. I send it off to my retoucher. Anyway, my point is that on the portrait system, we talk a lot about having packages, like small, medium, and large packages. Instead of just being shoot and burn, here's all the images on a disc. Well, one, if you're going to do like solid retouching and everything, that's not sustainable to like hand retouch every 100 photos for every session when you're only charging $500. Like it's just not sustainable. But like for my personal branding packages, for example, it's 5, 10, 20 photos. And because it is a smaller amount of photos, I'm able to give attention to each image. And it becomes like quality over quantity. Not that I'm spending hours on each image because I'm not. I mean, I've got it down to a science. Like you said, I've learned the tools. I know, you know, my style, so it doesn't take as long. But there's something about just the quality over quantity. Like, you know, if you get your wedding, I had a friend who was like, oh my God, I just got my wedding album, like my wedding digital, and it was like 3,000 photos. And she's like, I am so overwhelmed by this. Half of them, my eyes are closed or whatever. And I'm like, man, if that photographer had narrowed that down to like 400 of the best from the day, or even less than that, and really just honed in on those, that, you know, section of photos that were really great, my friend would have been like, look at these amazing photos. So I like helped her cull them all down and, you know, pick the best ones. And then she was happy. But there's a difference there, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The more images that you give them, the less value those images hold.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
And I think that this probably stems from being a beginner and not knowing what images. And I still struggle. Like, I'm not trying to like sit up on this like high pedestal and be like, oh, well, that's because you're a beginner. Like, I still struggle with this every day, especially like with my underwater photography. I'm like, oh, which frame? Like, which frame is better? I don't know. And sometimes I'm like, I just wish that I had somebody to tell me which one is better. And like, cause I can't decide. But it really comes from this place of unsure feelings about what your client is going to want to see. And ultimately, your client wouldn't have hired you if they didn't like the images that are on your website, right?
Yes.
Or your examples. So why would you include an image to your client that doesn't represent what you would put on your website? If it's less perfect than what you would put on your website, don't give it to them. Mm-hmm. Don't include it. I mean, you know, that's a very hard one for me because I will be able to like argue with anyone why the sky isn't blue. I can argue anything. I can like rationalize anything in my own head. So it's like very hard for me to actually like be definitive, be decisive, and be like, this is the frame that I want to include.
Yeah.
But it's hard. Ultimately, it's really, really hard, and it's a struggle every day, but I think you have to trust yourself.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I typically go off of my gut, my first gut instinct. You know, the way that I call in Lightroom is I'm selecting. So, it, you know, for a personal branding shoot, I typically do 6 outfits, and I will do 6 or 7 poses quickly in each outfit. And so then I've got 6 or 7 frames. Sometimes I double shoot if I'm worried about them, if they're big blinkers or whatever. So let's say if one outfit, I've got, you know, 10, 11 images. I will select all of them, that group of photos in that same outfit in survey mode. And I will just quickly look and I'll star with 1 star, the ones that I know I really like. And I just do a first pass. And then I just keep going down outfit. Every time like the outfit changes or the backdrop changes or whatever, then I will, you know, regroup them and look at them again. And I do 1 pass and then I go through again, you know, and I just look at them larger individually, like good, good. Okay. Yep. 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 Done and done. And I can't tell you how much time this saves me. I just trust my gut. I go with it. But I'm also including a variety of expression, of composition. I'm always trying to change up those things, changing up outfits frequently, backdrops frequently, because I know that that's going to sell more based on like packages. Mm-hmm. Like if someone's in 6 outfits, they're never going to walk away with 5 photos. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, they're going with the 10 or 20. Mm-hmm. So anyways, but I've gotten this down to a science, and it's like once you get in your groove and your rhythm with this, it just gets so much easier. And it's the same, you know, when you're adding your retouching style. It's, yeah. I don't know how I ended up on that tangent, but there I went.
I think the art of editing and culling your own images is an important skill to work on. I think that's why we're here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also like having a mentor that can look at your images from a different point of view. Like I love the idea of portfolio reviews, but I also think just as much can be gained from like your peers, like looking through and picking apart your images.
Yeah.
Because I think that first of all, they might see something that's like totally different than what you see in the image.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's also important. So sit down with your friends and go through your website and just be like, I'll trade you. I'll tell you what I think of the images on your website and you tell me what you think of the images on my website.
It's no ego. You got to let that ego go.
Totally. Because do you want to become better? Do you want to see your images from all different viewpoints? Like, hopefully you do. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're not going to be very successful if you just care about what you think and then that's it.
Yeah. Well, and we encourage that too in the portrait system in our Facebook group. Our members' Facebook group is for people to post their images and ask for critique. It's invaluable.
It is.
I mean, we talk about that all the time with, you know, awards and accreditation too, getting, you know, the judges to tell you whether or not your images are professional standard and scoring. And And you can get feedback there too. It truly is invaluable. I know that that helped me to become a much better photographer because people were pointing out things that I just wasn't seeing, like over-softening skin. That was an issue for me when I first started that I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
And then another thing too is with the presets when I first, you know, I was like buying all the different presets at Looker's, all shiny and, you know, it's like, And one of my clients, I think I talked about this on this podcast before, but I was a wedding client way back in the day. And she was like, it looks like my eyes are a different color. And I was like, oh my gosh, the preset changed her eye color. And I didn't realize that. I was like, I am so sorry. I was so embarrassed. But I see that a lot with presets not preserving skin tones. Mm-hmm. You got to preserve skin tones. This is someone's skin color. You can't change it. You can't change their eye color. And again, I did it not meaning to. So I'm just saying, like, I don't think a lot of times people mean to do it, but I think sometimes people want their images to look so cohesive with these, using these presets and stuff, that they don't realize what they're doing and they are changing skin tone.
There is definitely a lot of opportunities to go overboard once you learn all these tools. Like, you are dangerous.
That's a really good way to put it. A lot of opportunity to go overboard. Mm-hmm.
There is this time in every retoucher's life where they just learn the skills and then they just go gung-ho at it, right? And then they kind of like, they do too much damage.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times I really stress like turning on that retouching back and forth, like on your layers and like,
yes,
still looking at the original. Like if you're in Lightroom, a really good keyboard shortcut for that is the backslash button to see what you've done to it and then seeing the original. And a lot of times in Photoshop, if I'm like playing around with like a color treatment, or I'm adding like color grading to my images, if I can't decide on whether or not I like what that layer is adding to the image, I will like lower it to 50% opacity and then move on.
Yeah.
Because like, I don't have time for this. Like you can't scrutinize every single layer that, I mean, I used to have this quote above my desk, which is there's a fine line between productivity and perfection. And like, you got to kind of like run with it, but also, and then there's the quote from Coco Chanel where she's like, get dressed, get everything on, and then take one piece off. Right.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
You got to think the same way in retouching. Sometimes you just got to let like sleeping dogs lie.
Yeah. People say that a lot too. Like they're just too much of a perfectionist. And I'm like, well, this is not going to help you in your business. No. You're not going to be using your time wisely. It's not worth it. Your client is seriously not going to notice.
Yeah, totally.
I mean,
especially if you're retouching at 400%, like right. Zoom.
Right.
You know, I was like, I spent 35 hours on a composite of my kids.
Oh,
recently, wow. I'm sorry, 45 hours on a composite of my kids recently. It's called H's for Hijack. And I used, like, I integrated, like, Adobe Firefly, and I integrated, like, AI and generative fill to do the background and the reindeer. And then my kids are, like, stealing Santa's sleigh from him.
Cool.
And it's part of a, like, 26. I'd like to do one for each letter. Like, I've got J is for jellyfish and, like, U is for umbrella and all of those composites.
Cool.
But I was literally doing that. I was in at 400%, like using a custom hairbrush on Santa's beard to make sure that the edge of it was like properly like detailed. And then I'm doing this and I'm like, I texted my friends at Adobe. And I was like, y'all need to like just show a big like red screen whenever you start retouching and whenever you zoom into like 400%. That's to basically like you are entering like the waste of time zone because like no one is
alarm
going to
sound,
see this.
Sound like.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh.
Like,
oh,
so it happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. It happens to the best of us. But with the more tools that you use in Photoshop, like, one of the big ones that I'm totally digging right now is making custom brushes for like edge work, for like whenever you need to like cut something out of one image and put it in another. Now this is like composite stuff, right? So this is not like regular photography retouching and what you would need to do there. But if you're interested in like creating images that are not that are not possible in real life, which is like what one of my passions is, then like that's when you really dive deep into the Photoshop stuff and get lost in there. And one of my favorite like advanced tools that I'm really loving is custom brushes and custom brush settings, right? So you can go in, you can create a brush. So for example, I sell a bunch of like beauty brushes. I sell like 209 beauty brushes.
Oh, dang.
And instead of like painting in each specific eyelash, if I wanted to like add lashes to an image, I've got a stamp that I brushed in every single realistic eyelash. And then you basically stamp it once on its own layer in Photoshop. And then like you've got a full set of lashes just added in there. I've got them for like eyeshadow. I have them for like irises, like adding striations to eyes, for catchlights, for eyebrows, like painting and eyebrows and stuff like that. All different shapes and stuff. But I have these brushes that are a single lash. And because of the brush settings that are applied to it, meaning like how the brush reacts when you click and drag down, it looks as if you're like adding realistic lashes to an eye.
Wow.
And because you add different values in the brush settings area, which is like different tilt of the brush and not just like left and right tilt, but it can actually tilt like to that third, that Z axis, right? To make the brush look a little bit more angled. And then you're adding randomness every time you add like, for example, like jitter, size jitter. You can change, you can add randomness to the size of the brush. You can add randomness to the tilt of the brush. You can add randomness to the colors that the brush is painting.
Wow.
It's like, it's wild and it's really fun for anybody who's like looking for that next advanced thing to like geek out on. That's what I would suggest.
Fantastic. That's the kind of stuff I like that people do for me. Like I can just buy something that does it for me.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. It's one of those things that people, you just, you know, one thing at a time, just start learning the tools one at a time. And I promise you will thank us for it.
Mm-hmm.
You truly will. Yeah.
You know, every little thing that you learn is going to make your life easier in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because what if you need something really, one more thing about the whole retouching thing. If you have a retoucher who does everything for you and you need something done really quickly and they're not available, then you're in trouble.
Yep. So absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Christina.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I do have some questions though that I always ask at the end of each episode. And the first one is, what is something you can't live without when you're doing a photo shoot? And if you want to, I know you have a photography business and the retouching business, but you could do like, I don't know, something you can't live without when you're retouching. Like, I don't know, something you use while you're retouching. It's up to you, however you want to answer it.
I'll do one for both. So for my photography business, it's definitely a scrim. Because I will actually add, instead of using a reflector on the bottom, I actually add lights, up lights.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
In my headshots. So for photography, it's definitely my scrim and the lights that are adding fill into the areas that would usually be shaded. And then for the retouching business, it's definitely my tablet, my Intuos 5 retouching tablet.
I was wondering if you're going to say a tablet.
Difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Number two is, how do you spend your time when you're not working?
What is that?
A lot of people say that.
Yeah. Between the two businesses, it's really tough to find time to not be working. But I would say spend time with my kids, and I love to garden.
Oh, nice. Flowers or food or both?
We live in a townhouse right now, so unfortunately I don't have the space that I would love to have, but I would definitely be growing my own food if I had more space.
Awesome. All right. And number three is, what is a photography-specific product that you would recommend? I mean, obviously you said scrim for the first one, but
a product that I would recommend.
It could be a retouching product too, or even one of your products. Like, what's your favorite product that you have out there?
Oh, well, I would probably recommend the beauty brushes that I sell, the 209, because those are wildly time-saving, especially for any portrait photographer. There's hair brushes, there's eyelash, eyebrow, eyeshadow brushes, iris brushes, which just make your retouching go wildly faster. So that would be my little tip.
I love that. I'm all about efficiency. All right. And last one, what would you tell people who are just starting out in this whole crazy business?
I think that I would tell them to focus, like obsess about learning to create the best photographs that they possibly can. And do that until their work is like really incredible. But then I think that I would tell them that there's going to be a time when you're going to have to obsess about expanding your abilities in other fields that are not directly related to photo. Marketing, mm-hmm. business development, pricing, sales, like doing your own taxes, whatever. This is not a one-skill business. You can be a mediocre photographer and a great salesman and make more money as a photographer than an incredible photographer who doesn't understand anything about marketing, anything about SEO, anything about building websites. Those are the ones that are going to fail. So I feel like I would probably tell them that it's all important, not just becoming the best photographer at what you do. You have to survive. You have to make a living. And the way that you have to make a living and survive is by being good at it all.
This is excellent advice. Excellent. Probably some of the best advice I've heard on this question for.
I think I'm just like, telling myself this right now, you know?
With me both.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but that's, you just are dead on with what you just said. Cannot stress that enough. Well, thank you. And where can people find you online? Sharkpixel.com, obviously, but what about on social media?
Yeah, so sharkpixel.com is the retouching website. The DC Headshots website is christinashirk.com. And then my social is shark_pixel on Instagram. And I'm also on YouTube too. So you can check out Shark Pixel on YouTube.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again. This was amazing.
Yeah, it was fun.
Appreciate you. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I feel like there's even more we could have talked about. I looked at the clock and I was like, oh my gosh, it's already been an hour. All right, Christina, thank you. And I will see you at WPPI.
Yes, can't Yay. Wait. Fantastic. It's going to be awesome.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for listening to the Portrait System podcast. Your 5-star reviews really help us to continue what we do. So if you like listening, would you mind giving us a review wherever you listen? I also encourage you to head over to SueBriceEducation.com where you can find all of the education you need to be a successful photographer. There are over 1,000 on-demand educational videos on things like posing, lighting, styling, retouching, shooting, marketing, sales, business, and self-value. There's also the 90-day startup challenge plus so many downloads showing hundreds of different poses. We have to-do checklists for your business, lighting PDFs, I mean truly everything to help make you a better photographer and to make you more money. Once again, that's SueBriceEducation.com.